Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller.
That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, I said I like you, like it or not. That's when it got wheels off.
Robert Ellis has it going on. He is funny. He is savvy. He is talented beyond all measure. He can play all sorts of instruments, like tons of different instruments. He can compose for string sections and orchestras. He can produce albums. He can write songs. He can stand up on stages and perform those songs. He has one of the funniest senses of humor of anyone I know. And it turns out he's actually like a really kind of sweet, sensitive guy on top of it all. And he's super good looking. Bastard. He is an embarrassment of riches. But he's also a real human being. You know, he's like a sensitive, artistic type. And he does a great job in the conversation you're about to hear of just letting you in, letting you see sort of behind the facade, if there is a facade, you know, letting you, you know, into the inner workings of Robert Ellis. He's an old friend of mine, but he's somebody that I felt like I learned a lot in the course of this conversation. I'm so glad I got to interview him. And man, I miss having these conversations in real life, but it's really great to be able to talk to an old friend, even via Zoom, even for a podcast. But the conversation does go on towards the end a little bit. We sort of geek out on recording studio stuff, and we, you know, have some shared memory lane walking that we do together. But it's pretty sweet. I hope that nobody feels like it was overly indulgent. I know I drop an F-bomb. I don't think he curses, but you know, just I'm trying to give you all the fair warning before it starts. Bottom line is, Robert Ellis is a really good dude, and I'm so glad that I got to give him the Wheels Off treatment. So, here you go, Robert Ellis on Wheels Off. Welcome to Wheels Off, Robert Ellis. How are you?
Wonderful. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Ish.
Yeah, I'm as good as I can be in like a compounding series of disasters.
I know, right? Where are you joining us from?
I'm in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah. Nice. This won't come out for a little while, but you and I are recording this like on the heels of the crazy Texas ice storm, big freeze.
Yeah, so we missed each other. I guess we talked maybe a month ago and texted and said, hey, let's do this. And then we both had crazy stuff come up and missed each other twice. And then that storm hit and life as we know it, which is already crazy during COVID, just got even crazier. And I know you're not in Texas right now, but I cannot even explain to you how just like apocalyptic the whole thing felt here. Yeah. There was like no gas and no food. And all these rednecks and 4x4s are like going 50, you know, down a residential and like, you know, I think a lot of the people here, at least, were like, see, this is the moment we've been waiting for. The infrastructure collapse, we predicted.
Oh, God.
So yep. It was weird. Yeah.
My mom was there and I was, and my sister's family and my brother's family. But it's my mom in her 70s that I was most worried about. And they didn't have heat for a couple of days. She's like, I'm just under the covers.
Oh, yeah. Well, if she's 70, she's probably dealt with some crazy times before. And I found that a lot of the older relatives that I had I was like, how is everything? Are you okay? And they're like, ah, yeah, we're fine. We can go without electricity for a couple of days. You know, I don't know.
Oh my God. Well, okay. Let's get to the thing, the world that you and I can kind of control or pretend that we can control, the world of our like creative lives. And I wonder what are you working on right now and how does it light you up?
I'm doing a lot of stuff. So maybe to give you a background, you know, up until this last year, I made records and toured and kind of did the standard music cycle thing that we all do. And when COVID hit, I felt like I needed to pivot. You know, the world was forcing me to pivot, but it had also been something I'd wanted to do for a long time. Like the Groundhog Day sort of like wash, rinse, repeat situation of just like making a record, putting it out, touring it, doing press, doing that again. Like it just started to kind of wear on me. So I kind of shifted gears. I was living in Austin, and right around March when South by Southwest got canceled, I was like, okay, I need to get my shit together. I need to buy a house. I need to move. And we moved to Fort Worth, which is, you know, it's different than Austin. It's like, it's been an adjustment, but the real reason I moved here is because my good friend, Josh Block, has a studio here called Nile City Sound. And we've been partnering and producing records together. So basically, since this all started, I've been in the studio kind of nonstop. And I'm still writing and I'm still, you know, pursuing my career, but in a much more relaxed way than I ever have. And yeah, I'm just focusing on, I don't know, just trying to generally be creative and not so like album Robert Ellis oriented, you know, like finding ways that I can play music and make music happen. That aren't so direct. And yeah, we just finished, you know, Zach Williams from Lone Bellow. Mm-hmm. We just produced a record for him. And cool. I did one over the summer for this New York artist called Belliver. He's like a really weird folk artist. And I'm really excited about that one. And just kind of going, you know, it's been cool.
It's funny. I've always thought of you as this a weird kind of hybrid because you're such a great sort of front man entertainer, but you're also, I feel like you're such a great guitar player. Like,
thank you.
Well, I mean, I think you play multiple instruments, but I was blown away when I figured out like you actually play guitar. Like you play the hell out of a guitar. Does it feel weird to de-emphasize right now like the Robert Ellis brand as like a performer, frontman, lead singer, whatever, and build up? I mean, it feels like maybe you're more of an artist and less of a brand. Does that make
sense? Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely a pivot that I needed to take for my own sanity. And also, you know, talking about branding, that thing that you're saying, like, I never really realized how good of a guitar player you were, that is a branding error on my part. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like for a long time, I haven't really been telling the whole story of like what it is that I do. And I think that I think it's important. Like the records that I've made, many of them I self-produced and I did all the string arrangements and I played a lot of the instruments. And like, I think you think of a guy like Blake Mills, and in the same sentence that you say, oh, I love his songwriting, you also say, I love the other musical stuff that he does. And I think that was sort of an error, whether it be my own or you know, the people that I worked with in sort of getting the music out there. Cause I, you know, what I do is there are times where I've been like in very mainstream commercial situations. And I feel like my music does not land the way that it should. And I just over the years have gotten the feeling that what I'm doing is for a more nuanced audience. And there are like musical things in it that will really appeal to some people and really not appeal to most people. And I think I'm just struggling to find those some people now, you know, like.
Isn't that weird? Because it's, it sounds like that thing of where you're, what's the humble brag or whatever, like I'm too good for all these dummies, but I get you. Like I had the head of Elektra Records years ago say, you're just too sophisticated. And I was like, I thought that was a good thing. Right. Like, no,
I mean, I think that, it's just, there are different kinds of music and they're all valid. You know, some people listen to music because they want to be challenged. Some people listen to music because they want to feel at ease. They want to feel comfortable. Like, music is wonderful because it can do all of those things, but everyone's relationship to it is different. And I think for a while I've made music that is semi-challenging, but presented in a context that is supposed to feel easy, you know? And I don't know that that's kind of a bait and switch, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well, and I wonder, there was a time when the people that would go out on a stage didn't write their own material. And then it became important for the artist to have a voice where they were saying their own thing. And then at some point, and it was probably the collapse of the music industry around the turn of the millennium, it became important for the artist to be able to walk out on stage, present the material, have written the material, and also now be a marketing genius who can figure out, I mean, because like you describing that you didn't know how to properly contextualize your talents, I'm thinking like, well, I mean, how can you possibly do everything? Like, you're already pretty much doing everything. You could play all these instruments and be a songwriter and, you know, go out and deliver the material like you do. That's a lot.
It's, I mean, the hardest part to me is the latter, the presenting, you know, the especially like, you know, Instagram and like what you're doing, it's just so difficult. And that's one reason I think this podcasting thing is such a great medium for people like you and I, that I mean, I struggle with what to post, you know, like I put it up there, I have like a caption and then I'm like, I hate this. I hate what I'm saying. And like, I hate myself because I am like checking it. Like, how many likes did that get? What are these comments? Like, I hate that. I hate myself when I do that. But this, you know, this is like being on a stage and people get a real glimpse of who we are, like in the moment, quick, it's moving fast. And I think that's part of the challenge is, you know, you hear so much from labels and managers, like you need to add content. You need to do this. You need to do YouTube videos. And the large thing that they're saying is right. The thing that they're saying is you need to show people who you are, but the specifics of how you do it are up to you. You know, like it's not going to work the same way for everybody. Like, I think that I come off as disingenuous and sarcastic when I make a video that's like, hey, everybody, I want to tell you about the new record. Like, you know, like I see it when I look at the video back. I'm like, you look sarcastic. It's just not my medium, you know?
Oh, it's exhausting, too.
Exhausting, yeah.
And honestly, it's funny that you bring up the podcast thing. Like, this is the one thing out of all of it right now. Like, I've got so many things that I'm just flailing around in that I really love this. And it's the one thing I've made zero pennies at ever. Like, I've never made one penny off these podcasts. But I swear, every time I do it, I feel like I learn something. I'm inspired, especially now because I miss talking. Like, you and I would normally meet up at South by Southwest, hang out in a green room, have a conversation kind of like this.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I feel bad. The whole... I had a friend call me up yesterday and say, Glenn Phillips of all, like, really sweet guy. I've known him forever. He was in Toad the Wet Sprocket, is in, they've had a new record. And he's like, so what does your team do to make the social media assets for you that you're putting up? And I'm like, dude, there's no team. There's just me learning how to use an app on my phone where I take a dumb picture of my face and put letters on. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Well, at least, you know, you're doing it. I do. You know, like it's hard. It's, people don't realize how intimidating it is, especially for people as vain as we are.
And it's all fear motivated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, they're not going to like me. They're not going to like me.
Yeah. Right. So, okay. So the fun part, like when this was all starting for you and you were a kid and it was dawning on you that you were probably not like the other kids, did you know it was going to be music? Did you know you were going to be standing in a white tuxedo in front of people and the top, you know, whatever? Did you know you were going to be doing this? Like, was there an epiphany moment for you?
I was super fortunate. Like, I grew up in music, started playing piano before I could talk, and guitar around the same time. You know, like my mother was a wonderful piano player and teacher. and she was interested in jazz and country and classical. And I grew up with that stuff, like, in a collaborative way, you know, like, it was just something that we did together. You know, my uncle was an amazing bluegrass guitar player, and at family events, at Thanksgiving, you know, like Christmas, there was just always music. There were songs, and it was like what you did to participate. It felt like, you know, it was never like, you're going to play music. It was like, I want to participate in this conversation. And I want to relate to you guys. So like, it was super early. I mean, I don't know that I really had a choice but to go into anything but music, because I took to it so young and I loved it so much. And I think it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, like you get to a certain point when you're 12 years old and like basketball is really not an option. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was just doing it so much, and I had gotten to a level where it was like, okay, I'm good at this. I want to keep reinforcing this. Feels good, you know, to try something and achieve it. And then you just keep like sort of zooming out, and that's your whole life. You know, you find something you like doing and you hit goals over and over, and that's exciting.
Yeah. It's so many times when I have conversations with artistic people, it's about sort of that they were lonely and they created this artistic world sort of by themselves, for themselves, and their, you know, whatever they were working on became their friend or their community or whatever. The thing about musicians that always stands out to me is, and your story more so than most people, is that it's such a collaborative thing. Like the cure for loneliness is built into that. And I wonder if part of what has drawn you to be the producer that you are now, and emphasizing that part of you, like that's the little kid who's like sitting in the room full of people wanting to have the conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And I relate to those elements of like songs are an escape, and they're sort of your way out. But I think that it's a little bit, it just depends on how you look at it. They're your escape in the sense that you find your community, and that happens somewhere else through song, but it's still not an alone thing. Like if you love John Prine as a kid, like he's your friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like you relate to his music. I think it's the same thing. You find people you have a common interest and passion with, and whether you're physically with them or you just have this kindred love of something, you know, it connects you. And that's important, I think. And producing is the same way. It's like when all this was going down, I feel like the writing was on the wall that we weren't going to see each other in the green room for a while, you know, mm-hmm. And it just seems so clear. I've wanted to pivot and do producing for a long time. And I was like, this is completely doable. We can get 5-10 guys in a room, get everyone tested and make music together and do this in this controlled way. As long as we're careful and we really, you know, do this the right way, we can continue to make music and be collaborative. But the way that I was doing it before, I don't know. I'm just not sure it's ever going to exist like that again. I hope it does. But I couldn't go a year doing nothing. You know, if it was going to be a year, I definitely wasn't going to just sit around and be like, wait for them to call me for the next tour. Let me know when we can go out again and do what we absolutely love.
It's funny. I think about the very first time you and I ever played that I remember ever playing together. It was a South by Southwest gig. I don't know if you remember this. Maybe you had, were you on New West in 2010, mm-hmm. 11, 12, somewhere in there?
You guys were at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And so, I remember meeting you and just thinking like, I've never met more of a rock star. Like this person was like, so born. Cause you were like, you were so young. You had hair down to your ass. You're just like all your chops were there. And I was like, this guy. And at the time I was almost like, you know what? Screw this guy. He's like, he's got way too much going on. And you seemed like you were so supremely confident. And then I've gotten to know you over the years and you're a human being with depth, complexity. But I wonder, because it's so easy, you know, to look at you and think, you've got it all, right? I wonder for you what it's like on the inside. Like, I imagine, and I know this for a fact because you and I are friends, you do have to sort of battle through self-doubt, the tricky internally generated obstacles, you know, and I wonder like how you've dealt with that. And I think about how surprised I would be if I went back in time and knew, you know, just how much you did worry in your own brain.
Yeah. I mean, I was writing a song yesterday that is completely like, it's pretty down. The song is called Yesterday's News. And the tune is just about how quickly everything moves, and just this feeling of like, you know, if you asked me when I was like 16 years old what I wanted to achieve, like it would be Led Zeppelin at, you know, like a huge arena. Like it would be music on this like gigantic level, you know, like that's really what I envisioned for myself. And I think that's what I wanted to manifest. You got to be honest with yourself, you know, like I had that idea, but the music that I loved, like really connected with and wanted to play, and the music that I eventually made, it's not the music that connects in an arena, you know, like
too so, sophisticated,
maybe, or just like, you know, who's the biggest icon in our genre? You know, it's like, and I don't mean past, like current. I mean, if it's like people that are out playing and stuff, if it's
Isbell.
Yeah, Isbell or John Prine or yeah, no longer with us, yeah. But you know what I mean? Like still you're talking about a few thousand people.
You yeah. know,
you're not talking about a Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
It's like, there is a difference, and that is super exciting and admirable, and like it's amazing, but they're different things. And I think to varying degrees, like I'm cool with it. Like I'm psyched if there's 200 people that are connecting to my weird music in a room, it's rad, you know? And yeah. It's like, I definitely don't like feel conflicted. I know the reason that I'm not playing in arenas, if that makes sense. And if I wanted to do something to change that, I think I would have. I have to be honest with yourself, I guess, about what it is that you're doing.
Like, yeah. Like, I wonder if the thing you had done was to like stop down, calculate how you could be something you're not.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if that would have worked though, because it seems like the thing, one thing that keeps coming up in these conversations is that kind of, false approach, just the sort of engineered thing, yeah, where you're like,
yeah.
Okay, well, Coldplay is the only people, you know, right now that are filling up arenas that still play guitars or whatever. Imagine mm-hmm. Drag, I don't even know. Like, there's so few of them that even yeah,
totally.
Like, I just wonder, like, you would have had to be a different person, probably, right?
Absolutely, yeah, because people sense when something is honest, I think, you know, like they really, I think they can feel it. And I was just having a conversation the other day with someone. You hear people talk about mainstream music sometimes in this way that's like, oh, that's fake. You know, that's that. I actually don't think so. I think that those people are doing a real honest thing. Like, I think that these big country stars who sing about trucks and beer and all this stuff, like, that's not fake. Like, if it was fake, I think people would sense it. Like, I really think these people like the stuff they're talking about. And they're excited when they get that single from that writer. They're like, this is a banger. This is going to be like, they appreciate that music in a way that you or I could not and wouldn't. And they sell it.
Yeah. Like, I think they would have to believe it to be able to walk out there and do it, right? It's not like a filter you can pop into a recording to make it sound like they actually believe their own bullshit.
yeah. And I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I mean, and as you know, in this business, I think both of us have been fortunate. I haven't ever had like real extreme pressure, but there have been a lot of little pressures to like, you should write with this person. You should put this song as the single. You should do this. And I feel like I've fallen prey to that a couple times, and it hasn't worked. And I don't believe it anymore. You know, like all those things, like, I don't know, for like four records now, there was this narrative of like, this is going to be the one. This single is going to break it out to the next level. It's going to, you know, like, and you have this feeling of momentum. You do all this work. You do all this press. The record's out for 3 months. And you're sort of like, this is it. We're going to, the single is going to make radio. And then everything's going to change. And it just has never really happened that way. And, you know, in the moment, I guess there's a little bit of disappointment. But then zooming out over 10 years, I'm like, oh no, I made a lot of progress. I'm actually in a really good place right now. Like, you know, like.
Well, I know, believe me, I know. I know the story. Yeah. And you know what, cause you know, I don't know if I'm a full generation ahead of you, but I'm pretty close to that. And I did get to experience the major label system before it all collapsed, and where they would spend like $350,000 on an album, which is, yeah, insane. But I, you know, I did hear that a lot, and I was on labels with like Third Eye Blind, where Third Eye Blind would have the giant hit and my label would, yeah, be like, why can't you do that? I'm like, I don't know. It just doesn't come.
I want to. Yeah. You think I don't want that?
But now I look back at those bands that had that hit, that little blip in time, and they're on tours that are called like the 90s, you know, reunion tour, or the, yeah, endless summer from 30 years ago. Let's remember the day of nostalgia, that kind of thing. So yeah, you and I will never be saddled by a giant hit song that marks us specifically to a year. So there's that.
Yeah. The artist path too is like, you know, I think that if you go back to some of these people that we admire and love, you know, you think of Willie Nelson's career and you're like, oh man, Willie Nelson is huge. If you really went back to all those records, I'm sure some of them were like really rough, you know, like he probably had a lot of ups and downs, and he took the artist path. And now that he's 70 something years old, we see this like full picture and we're like, that's great. I admire that. But there was definitely all those struggles. It wasn't, yeah, like, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think all those older artists like have, If nothing else, playing with some of those guys and talking to those guys has like kind of put me at ease to just like take it all and try and look at big picture and just continue to charge forward, you know, yeah, be the last man standing.
Well, I think there's so much to be said for that. And it's something that honestly I've always admired about your career is like, I feel like every record is new and different and you just keep going and you keep making great stuff. And I feel like every single record that comes out takes you further along, you know, and you're still doing it. I really think, it's great. And I love that you're producing now. I'm so excited to hear more of this stuff.
I'm psyched. It's so fun. We're mixing Zach's record right now. Mm-hmm. And we did string arrangements for like four tunes. Like, you know, we recorded with the band, and then the way the string arrangement thing works is like, once that's done, then I spend a month in my computer just like arranging everything. And then now in COVID world, you know, prior you would have the string players in and you would conduct a session and that would be like a really wonderful day. But now everyone sends in their string tracks. So the players were in New York and they're amazing players, but I just was like, here you go. Here's just the music. And then you get all the tracks back and I still haven't heard what we did.
Wow.
And I'm just like, oh, I just want to hear it. Like I've heard it in my head, you know what I mean? But I, and so I'm really eager to get this record mixed and just to hear everything. Like once it's mastered too, and just be like months and months of work, like it's the satisfaction of like a long form project, you know? Yeah. It's like how people must feel when they write a novel or something. You get all these little gratifications from writing songs, and from when you're doing a long form project, it's like, it's like making a movie or making a novel or something. You finally get to see the thing, like, and until it's done, it isn't the thing.
Like, it makes me a little sad that you don't get to go watch the orchestra do the thing that you wrote, because I mean, that's such a rare thing to create on a piece of paper, like the musical notes that will make the sound that this fucking string section's going to do.
Yeah.
And I think that would, I couldn't do anything close to that, but I think that being able to stand there and watch it come to life would be such an incredible, like there's nothing like that. That's
so gratifying. It's so gratifying. And I'm, you know, like I have a background playing classical stuff. Like I played violin in school, but I'm definitely like the, you know, sort of redneck, like rocker guy in the room. Like I wouldn't say that what I'm doing is super sophisticated, especially for string players who've made this their life's work. So when you're in the session and you're able to conduct and just be like, hey, I wrote a fermata there. Is that what I mean? Like, usually they'll be like, oh, I think you mean this, and you can just sing it. And some of the stuff that isn't on the page exactly correct can still come across. With this, I was just like obsessing, trying to make it right.
So, yeah.
You know, like it needs to read right because I'm not going to be there.
Yeah. Can I remember I made one record with George Draculius in four or five. And it was, they had just figured out ISD inlines. And one of the big things people would do back then would be to have like the Ukrainian orchestra. You'd send them your music and then you'd be on an ISD inline and they would be performing it and recording it. And it was all very insane.
Some of that still exists. We use this program called Sound Movers, especially for mixing. And I've done it for a couple sessions that I couldn't attend, but Josh, my partner, will just like pull up Audio Movers is what it's called. And it gives you a live feed in your headphones of everything that's happening in the studio. And you can like chime in. And it's been super great during COVID because we can have the artist who's in Nashville or LA or whatever be listening to what we're doing if we have to do an overdub that they can't be there for, you know?
I've used that with Vance Powell for mixing and it's, boy, thank God for technology, because with everything happening right now, like you and I being able to talk from Fort Worth to the Hudson Valley in New York, like this is great.
Yeah.
Man, talking to you makes me wish so bad that we could be at a show together right now, just hanging out. But this is great. I'll take this. This is fantastic.
Soon-ish. Soon. Maybe. I mean, I'm going to get injected very soon with the vaccine. I'm just like, whenever it's, I don't even care which one. I just give it to me. And once that happens, you know, like I've got a kid, and so we've been extremely careful. Yeah. And I'm just ready to like play shows, see you, hang out. Also, really want to sit in like a just like wooden bar, you know, with like wood booths, and get like a big pint of beer and eat a cheeseburger. I don't know why that's something that I never realized how much I like wooden. I don't know what it is, but in my dream, that's what it is. It's like an older wooden bar.
Yeah. It's small, right? So like, like you're not going in there right now, but after the vaccine, yes. Okay. It's funny that I didn't realize that you had started so young and that you were like a prodigy, but of course you were. But I wonder now, going back to a 21-year-old version of yourself, what advice you might give if you were to run into yourself, Robert Ellis, in today's world, what advice you might give yourself?
I think it goes back to what we were talking about. Just don't make concessions. Don't ever make concessions. They're not real. They're not meaningful. And I haven't made a ton, but the few that I have, I'm just like, I hate them. I want them to be removed from the internet, you know, like, and it's not even necessarily that the thing that I did was bad. It was just that it wasn't what I wanted to do. And someone else said I should do it. And I wish I hadn't. I wish I never made one concession. And now I'm in that mindset, but definitely at 21, you know, they dangle all this stuff just right out of reach. And they say, everything's great, but if you just do this one extra thing, you can reach it. And it's not real.
Yeah. I wonder, because I kept thinking that these people that said that they knew the one thing I needed to do, like, I felt like they knew, right?
Yeah.
They know,
yeah, yeah.
They know the secret.
They must.
But there must be someone who knows a secret or some secrets, but I don't know if I ever met them.
No. And as you know, as we get older and we're like in a lot of these you know, as I've gotten into the business side and I'm like in meetings with people in these positions, I'm realizing more and more like, oh, they are just completely winging this call. They're just like eating a sandwich while their phone is on mute. And then as soon as they can, they say whatever pops into their head so that they can keep their job. And it's not like there's been like a bunch of thought put into any of this stuff. It's just like a boardroom meeting at an ad agency. Like someone's job at that agency is to talk about continuity. So he needs to say something about continuity in the call. Like he needs to chime in and say something. And I think that's what most of these people are doing is just like, what if you did this? Yeah. and not all of those ideas are something that somebody said to me early on, and you know this guy well, that stuck with me so much. Gary Briggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
Gary, I love to death. And he said something early on to me that I just thought was so poignant. He said, look, nobody knows your music better than you. He's just like, whatever advice I give you or anyone else gives you, we at minimum deal with your music for 6 months, 12 months. He's like, you have lived with it your whole life. You know the answer. So if I ever suggest something and you know it's wrong, tell me. And I was just like, that is the most mature, you know, it's something that you don't hear from people in A&R. You don't hear it from other music business people. And I was just so appreciative. That guy, you know, he worked at Reprise and did like Prince is 1999 and, you know, like Neil Young and like all this stuff. So he was, the artist temperament was something he understood and protected. And I just wish there were more people like that, you know?
I love that. It's funny that comes up more and more in these conversations is that the main tool we have, or maybe the main superpower that we have as artists is our instinct, right?
Yeah.
And when people start second guessing or going to some sort of a, you know, like, what is it when they put together a room full of people to listen to your record and tell you whether it's good or not?
Focus group?
Yeah. Like when they start focus grouping stuff and like, that's the antithesis of what we should be doing. So yeah, it's true. You know what to do. Not some guy who's just like eating a sandwich and chiming in for 5 seconds.
Yeah. And the whole idea of a radio promoter, I cannot for the life of me figure out how basically the whole budget of the record funnels down to this one guy who it just on his gut, he decides where you put all the focus. Like, what is that? That's crazy. and it is usually a guy, which usually an older white guy. And I just don't, and he just says, this is the single because I listened to the record and I think so. And now all of the effort to make the record, we're going to pour all of our attention and focus into this one part of it. And this is what the story is going to be. It's going to be this song because I think so.
And we'll give it 3 months.
Yeah. It's bizarre. I don't know how else they would do it, you know, but it does feel like with Spotify and stuff, some of that process has become democratized where like people get to decide what the single is. And that makes more sense. And maybe you can sort of take some of those cues, put stuff out, see what people respond to, and then put energy behind the thing that feels like the thing that people are responding to. I just don't know. I mean, I think a lot about shows, you know, in my mind, the single is the song that in the crucible of performance is felt, you know, that connects. You play enough shows for a new record and it's pretty clear at the end of the tour, like, oh, this is the one. People every night love this. And you start putting it at the end of the set, you know, in the right place. And it works. And historically, that song has not been the one that the people I've worked with have chosen as the single.
I know, and it sucks. I wonder, I feel like that's a metaphor, right? Like you put out a record, you tour it for a year in, you know what the good thing was.
Yeah, totally. That is something that I've been thinking about with production a lot. And on my last record, the Texas Piano Man record, I wrote all the tunes. I got the band together and out of pocket paid for us to rehearse. And then I did 2 weeks of shows in Texas before we recorded the record. And I advertised the shows as Robert is going to be playing only the new record. So these shows, we didn't play any old material. It's just 2 weeks of brand new stuff. And then we went into the studio and recorded the record. And I've just gained so much insight from that process, you know, because of what you're saying. Every other record is like, at the end of the year, I'm like, man, I wish we could do that record now.
Yeah. You know? And in the olden days, and a lot of times with a band's first record, that is the case. You would have played the songs in shows over and over again. And then you got so good at it. Then you go and make the record. Yeah, man. I love that. I love that idea. I wish I had done that.
You got time. I mean, I just figured it out, and I won't do it any other way from now on. You know, like everything down to track order. Like, how do you know what the track listing is? How do the songs flow? Like, the only way to know that is to try them in different orders and to see how they feel. And like, live is, it's really high stakes. You know, like when something doesn't work, it really doesn't work, and you know it.
Yeah, that's what it is, right? It's not like the audience is going to fill out a questionnaire afterwards and tell you. It's you as you're performing them for people. Like, that's when it becomes real. You feel it. Like, okay, this is working. This isn't. Yeah, that's weird. And it only happens. It's the fact of being observed.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think there's a lot to in the live performance thing, though. This is all really out there. But like, some of your personality stuff, like you on stage, it also fills in a lot of blanks, and it makes things work that don't work on the page and they don't work on the record, you know, because you're standing there and you're like delivering it. So that was another thing that I thought about a lot with that last record, doing those shows. Like you mentioned the whole white tuxedo thing, like trying to imbue some of that character on the album that you get from the show, you know, so that it isn't just like it all works together. Like the show, it's about the performer. And I really, really tried on the last one. And I think moving forward, it's something I'm going to be way more cognizant of, like making the performer really seen on the record, you know, whether it's the cover and the name and the just the type, all of it. Like it needs to have that sort of like charm, you know.
That I love
you get on stage. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard. It's really hard to do, but I think trying has got to be good.
Yeah. when the Texas Piano Man came out and everything around it with the videos and the performances and the album art, I thought, oh my God, Robert is on fire. What is this? It was like, again, it goes back to like, where did you figure out how to market it? Who on your team told you to do that?
They thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
The whole process. I mean, literally everyone. I've told this story before, but I moved for the record cover. We moved a grand piano to the top of a mountain to take the photo. And it was not easy. We did it with a very small crew of people in the Texas desert. And rains like crazy there. A monsoon came down while we're halfway up the mountain. Everyone's got to scramble. You know, there's like 10 people with camera equipment and a piano. Like the poor producer that I hired to help shoot the video is helping me lug this piano up the side of the mountain. I mean, it was a half a mile up the incline to get to where we shot the thing. And the piano weighs 400 pounds. You know, it was, like, it was stupid. It was insane. But, and every step of the way, people on the team were like, this is crazy. This is absolutely... You know, and it's simple stuff like the song Topo Chico, you know, it's about a bubble water that I really like. I at least three times heard, you shouldn't put that on the record. And I was just like, I finally hit a point in my life where I was able to just say like, you're wrong. You're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. you know, like I'm doing it this way. I did it the other way. I want to do it this way. I don't want to fight about it. I don't know. A lot of that stuff was just more calculated. I made a Pinterest board. Like before, when I was writing the songs and thinking about the look and the type and the name and all that stuff, I made a mood board for all of it. You know, like
I love that. See, because that's where calculation is different, because you're not calculating to try and make something that's going to be, you know, a massive radio smash. You're trying to make sure that you are in control of your artistic vision.
Yeah.
Love that.
It's hard. I teach a lot, and it's something that I tell my students a lot after this record. I mean, I feel like I learned it fairly recently, but inspiration and triangulation, you know, with people that I produce, the first step, they send me the songs they're working on. And then usually I'm like, can you also make a Spotify playlist of songs that you imagine either being on festivals with these bands or your song appearing on the radio next to their song. And then listening to that playlist gives you a lot of insight. You know, if out of those 20 songs, half of them have no drums, then it begs the question, like, there's going to be some sort of intimacy to what you want to do. And maybe having a drummer on the whole record is the wrong move, you know, and they can't tell you that necessarily. And doing that for yourself, like, yeah, just triangulating what it is that you want to do and really trying to be able to describe it. It's difficult. Like, you end up with really abstract associations. Like in the mood board, I had like a Donald Judd sculpture next to a picture of like Bob Wills, you know, next to a picture of like Freddie Mercury, next to like, you know, just like an open, wide open Texas landscape, you know, and like then you start to see how Bob Wills is kind of sitting in a similar way to Freddie Mercury in this picture. And so you move that picture over and then you notice like, oh, this statue is kind of the same shape. And then you like, you're like, this one doesn't work. This is an outlier. Delete it. And I don't.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
I love that. Well, I love the audio mood board too. I'd never used one until the last solo record that Sam Cohen from Houston, Sam Cohen produced, and he put together, he had me do what you described and he put together his own. It's incredibly useful. It's information, right? We need data. We need things that we can look at and soak up.
Yeah. It makes you honest with yourself about a lot of things. Listening to other music and you're like, I love all this stuff. And this is what I want to do, but my expectations are this other thing like that. You know what I mean? You got to make those things line up. It's like, if the music, and back to what we said earlier, if the music you're making is not going to change, then you need to do what you can with it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I love this. It makes me want to do shows with you. It makes me want to record with you. So all these things.
Come down. Come down. Yeah. I know you're familiar with the DFW area.
Yeah. My earliest recordings were all on College Street in Fort Worth, where my Uncle Ed had a little recording studio. So did a lot of hours there on a live to a tube 2-track.
Cool.
Yeah, it was crazy. Man.
Well, you would love Niles. So Josh built the place, and he produced the Leon Bridges stuff and has done tons of great music. And he built, I mean, he's a nerd. And he was in that band White Denim playing drums. And then he played with me on a couple tours, and we just became friends. And he built like his dream studio of just amazing, really unique vintage gear. And it's all about the live room. The control room is upstairs, and then the other room is just a huge live room, and there's no ISO booths. Everyone is always in the room together. And that was like, he built into the studio how he wanted to record. So it's been super fun.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing your enthusiasm and your wisdom. And I'm really glad I got to hang out with you. So thank you so much for appearing on Wheels Off.
Anytime. Thank you.
Woo!
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also,
As the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.